I got over it eventually with the help of a therapist.
Hello and welcome to Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig, episode 38. Hello, Reza.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
You look great.
Thank you very much. So do you.
Is that a new grey top you've got?
It is a new grey top.
Just to describe it to your listeners, Craig is wearing a very cool and very fetching grey top.
Thank you
very
much.
With the top two buttons unbuttoned, may I add.
You're looking very smart yourself.
Thank you.
If you are a new listener to the podcast, Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig is a podcast which will help you improve your English and take it to the next level. I'm Craig and Reza is here with me.
Hi.
And in this episode, we look at the grammar of ought to, must and should, and vocabulary connected to the home, in particular, the kitchen. There's a pronunciation section, difficult words for Spanish speakers, for example, the word island, with an S. But before this, we have some news for you. There is a new show over at inglespodcast.com called Pass FCE. This is a podcast that will help you with the FCE exam, the first exam from Cambridge. So if you're studying for the first certificate exam and you would like some free help, go over to inglespodcast.com and you will see Pass FCE on the home page. Other news, you can also now leave us a voice message, mensaje de voz, on the homepage at inglespodcast.com. Just go to the homepage and click the orange button, the button with the microphone, and leave your message, which should be no longer than 90 seconds because it's the free service. So I think a minute and a half is probably long enough for your message. And tell us what you think. Ask a question, leave a comment, and we will put your voicemail in the next podcast.
Craig, have we got much feedback from listeners?
No, it might be because I have to look at how the mobile app works for this. If you go to your computer, your laptop or your desktop, your sobremesa, and you have a microphone attached to your computer, it works with no problems. But if you're listening on your mobile phone or on an iPad or a tablet, I'm not sure how it's working, so that's something I have to check. But it is on the website, and we will welcome any voice messages that you send us, and we will put them in future podcasts. And if you don't know what to say, you could tell us a story because of your English, something positive that's happened to you, a door that has opened because of your English, something at work, in your social life, traveling, something that has made your life better. For example, I could say, because of my Spanish, I'm a better teacher, because I can save time, I can communicate vocabulary and grammar because I speak Spanish. So that's a because of my Spanish example. So tell us, because of my English, what has happened to you? Can you think of anything because of your Spanish that's happened to you?
Oh, yeah. When I went to Cuba on holiday a couple of years ago, I arranged quite a few things on internet. I arranged to stay in a few hotels before I got there, booked a few excursions, etc., and it had to be in Spanish. They simply didn't do it in English.
And you spoke in Spanish while you were there, presumably.
Yeah, and I even spoke on the phone to somebody in Spanish before I got there to arrange my arriving at their hotel. So, yep, I've already been able to do all of that because of my Spanish.
So if you have a because of my English story, go to the homepage, click on the button, record your voice and send it to us. Other news, we now have a sponsors page on inglespodcast.com. If you want to sponsor us, patrocinar is sponsor. So pay us some money and we will advertise your product Pay us lots of money and we will, if we like you, we will advertise your product and service on this podcast. If you would like details of that, if you're interested in sponsoring us, there is some information on the web page, and send me an email and we can discuss it. You can also now sign up for our email list. On the homepage, there is a form that you write your email and your name, and every month we will send you an email with details of all the podcasts we've released during the month. And you can sign up for this free email at inglespodcast.com. And remember, you can also study free at mansioningles.com. So let's dive in straight away to listener feedback. Reza, our first feedback is from somebody who I think you may know.
Can I guess?
No. Just listen. Hello, this person says. Hello, thank you very much for all your podcasts. I enjoy all of them a lot, and especially this one. Berta, Galgos 112, and me just like to thank you very much for your comments about greyhounds. This makes people curious. They can know how they are, their problems in Spain, and the work that Galgos 112 and other associations do for them. Every time you talk about my lovely Berta, or any greyhound actually, you are helping more greyhounds to find a family. I send you a big hug, and Berta, a sweet pity face.
The
una
pity face.
Cara de peña. Arancha.
It's got to be Berta and Arancha.
Yeah.
A big kiss for Berta and Arancha.
And another piece of feedback. Hola. Es la segunda vez que me dirijo a vosotros una pregunta. ¿Cuál es la diferencia entre ought, must or should? También, before you answer, Reza, también comentaros que moradores se usan más en Sudamérica que en España. Aquí decimos, como bien habéis dicho en el podcast, habitantes o lugareños, de lugar, place. Pero recordad que en América muchas veces hablan más correcto y aquí, que aquí en España.
Ooh, that's quite a controversial
that
thing
is,
to say.
Well, that, this is
controversial,
what, this
polémico.
Is, this is what, I don't have the name of the person who wrote this, but this is what the person said in the email. I'm improving my English very much, thanks to you. When I'll get money...
When I get money.
When I get money, first conditional. When I get money, I'm going to buy your CDs, but now it's impossible. I'm unemployed. Well, we're sorry to hear that, and we hope you find a job soon.
Who knows, maybe because of your English, you will get a job.
That's right.
And then you can give us lots of money for CDs.
Yep, and you can send us a because of my English story. So, Reza, shall we dive into the... Shall we start with the grammar? Ought, must or should? When should that be used?
Must we do it now?
We don't have to. Would you rather do it after all of the feedback?
Or? Yes.
Okay.
I'd prefer to hear all the feedback first.
We'll continue with feedback. And we have a message, an audio message from Marianne, one of our favourite listeners. She says the following.
Hello, Craig. Hello, Reza. I'm Marianne from Monzón, Huesca. This is my second podcast. I'd like to express my satisfaction for your speeches because they are really profitable.
Yeah, so it should be chats or talks.
Yeah, not speeches.
Or comments.
Comments, even better.
Mm-hmm. And really profitable, is that a translation from...
Yeah, profitable is just for money, really, isn't it? In modern English.
Yeah, a profitable company.
Yeah.
So what would be a better word?
Useful? Beneficial.
Beneficial, yeah. Useful. Yeah, because they are really beneficial or they are really useful.
In your last podcast, Craig pronounced flags... like flies, or almost that's what I've listened to. It is an Ireland accent or what?
Well, maybe she's confusing me and you.
Maybe.
You say the word...
flags. Flags.
Flags.
Flags.
I think she's speaking about you. Your vowel sound, flags, is...
A little bit different.
Is a little bit different.
But I'm definitely pronouncing the G... Flags. I'm not saying flies.
Okay. Say them again. Flags and flies.
Flies, flags. Flies, flags.
Flies,
flags.
Flags. Yeah. Flies and flags.
Apart from that, There is something wrong in your Spanish language. It's escuchar por primera vez.
There's a lot wrong in my Spanish language.
There's a lot wrong in my Spanish language.
Both of us.
You say escuchar por la primera vez. We say escuchar por primera vez o escuchar la primera vez, but not escuchar por la primera vez. It is not correct.
But you can't say por and la at the same time.
Exactly, and that's what I said on one podcast a few times. I said escuchar por la primera vez.
Well, so. I didn't know that either. So thanks to Marianne for telling us that.
Yes, thank you very much, Marianne. That's very useful. We are improving our Spanish.
Well, I say you thank you for all your teaching. That is really, really good. Bye, till the next episode.
Thank you, Marianne. And she also asks for the difference between hear and listen to.
Mm-hmm. For me, I would say that listen to is generally when it's planned, when you intend, when it's your intention to listen to something. Whereas hear is more for hearing things accidentally. It wasn't planned, it wasn't your intention, or someone told you but you didn't ask them.
Yeah, it's quite similar to see and watch, isn't it? Whereas watch, you'd be more active. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to something, you're more active, but you just hear it because it's a sense, es un sentido.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now shall we jump into ought to, must and should?
I suppose we should.
I suppose we should, if we have to. If we must.
So, the difference, or indeed the similarity. Well, I would say that should and ought to and must are all modal auxiliary verbs. You'll notice, listeners, that I said ought to. Ought to. Ought to do something. Ought to eat. Ought to run. Ought to travel. Ought goes with to. Which is unusual for a modal auxiliary verb. However, should and must are infinitive without to. Must go, must travel, must sleep, should travel, should sleep, should go. Okay, so don't forget the to with ought. Apart from that, they're really rather similar in many respects, but of course not 100% the same. That would be too easy. That would be too easy. And then we'd have nothing to talk about. So, since they're modal auxiliary verbs, that means they always go associated with another verb. You can't just say, I must, and that's it, because it doesn't mean anything. You must what? You must go, you must help me, you must come here, and you should. You should what? You should listen to me and do what I say, for example. So they always go associated with other verbs, like can and could and would. They're modal auxiliary, so they have to be associated with another verb. Now, as modal auxiliary verbs, also they have no third person singular S. You say, I must, you must, he, she, it must. Not must, doesn't exist. And it's the same with ought to and should. No S, third person singular. Now, should and ought to, for me, Craig, are more or less often interchangeable.
I was going to say that when you started. I thought ought to and should, the meaning or the strength of them for advice, I would say is more or less the same. You could interchange them, absolutely.
Craig has taken the words out of my mouth. Strength. I think it's all about strength. You're a mind reader. You're a mind reader. For me and for Craig, he's just revealed to me that should and ought to are more or less the same strength.
I think so.
Me too. Whereas must is a bit stronger, would you say?
For obligation, yes. You should go to the doctor or the dentist. You must go to the dentist.
Exactly.
Because you've got like a slight, very small toothache.
I do.
So I would say you should or you ought to go to the dentist. But I wouldn't say you must because it's not going to kill you. It's not such a strong piece of advice. But yeah. I think you should.
But you say to me, I should go to the dentist, but it's up to me whether I go or not. I may or I may not go. However, if I spoke to someone who knew a lot about teeth, perhaps another dentist, do you know any dentists, Craig?
I may know one dentist, yes.
Okay. If this dentist friend of yours happened to be in the room and I commented to him or her, oh, I have a toothache, they might say, oh, well, you must make an appointment to see me. You must. That's advice. They're not going to oblige me, but it's strong advice. It's coming from a dentist. I'm more likely to do it.
Right.
So they're both for advice. You should, you ought to go to the dentist. You must go to the dentist. But with must, I'm more likely, or it would be intelligent if I follow that advice.
And I think it's very important to understand that this, which one you choose, very much comes from inside of you, how you feel about it. Because me not being a dentist would not give very strong advice, but a dentist would give stronger advice because it's they feel it's more important. By the same example, if I know you're coming here to record a podcast and you like your coffee and I don't have any milk in the fridge, I would say, oh, Reza's coming in half an hour, I must get some milk. Well, I don't. It's not life and death. It's not an important, really important situation. If there's no milk, you're going to go out of the house in a very bad mood. But I feel this internal obligation to do it, so I would say I must.
Craig, you're a coffee lover, aren't you? You like a good cup of coffee.
I do.
Do you know that new cafe, that new coffee shop that has opened on my street in Valencia?
The Argentinian one with the
leche. Not that one. Mm. That's not on my street. That's in the neighbourhood. But there's one right opposite my flat now. What happened? Apologies to the Argentinians for all that. I got over it eventually with the help of a therapist. there's one which is open right in front of my house called, I think it's called Bluebell Coffee.
Right.
No, they don't pay me any money or sponsor me. But they could if they want, by the way. But they don't. It's just very nice. I mention it because it's opposite my house. And I know Craig's a coffee lover. So I would say to Craig, you must try Bluebell Coffee.
Okay, I will.
I say must because I'm giving Craig strong advice. Because I know it's important to him, coffee. I'm sure he would take a lot of pleasure from it. So I say you must. I'm not obliging him, it's strong advice. I could say to him, you should try the new cafe, or you ought to, but in the case of Craig, because I know coffee's important to him, I've decided to use the word must. Another use of the three words, as you said, is obligation. And again, I would say should and ought to is for less strong obligation, and must is for stronger obligation. For example, my wife thinks I should lose weight because the doctor said so.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks I should or I ought to lose weight. In fact, she's going to force me to do it, she says. But it's my wife, you know. So, yeah, she thinks I should or I ought to. However, when I speak to the doctor, when the doctor tells me, young man, you must lose weight, I feel that's a stronger obligation, almost like an order because he's a doctor. And I tell people, yeah, the doctor said I must lose weight, whereas my wife said I should lose weight.
But yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Another use is for duty. I guess you could say duty is similar to obligation, but not quite. For example, all of us, we ought to or we should all help our neighbors. It's our duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an obligation. There's no law says you that you have to. It's not obligatory, but as a duty, we ought to. Or if I wanted to express it more strongly, I would say we must all help our neighbors. It's not an obligation. I'm just saying it's a strong duty with must.
How do you feel about separating your rubbish into plastic and glass and food rubbish? Do you think we should or we must separate our rubbish for ecological reasons?
Personally, I think we really must do it if we have the facilities to do so. Perhaps in some places there are no facilities to separate. But if you have the facilities, I think you really must to save the planet because as everybody knows, there are grave problems that the environment is facing right now. So for me, I would say must.
Well, I would say should, because I'm not convinced, I'm not 100% certain that the local authorities in Spain, or in Valencia in particular, that they actually keep them separate and recycle everything we separate. So I'm not sure if the work I'm doing in separating my rubbish is actually effective in recycling it. So my internal feeling is not so strong as must, I'd say should. I think we should, because maybe they are. But must, I'm not so strong. I don't feel so strongly as you do.
That's a very good example of what you mentioned earlier. It depends on your personal perspective, which one you use. There are no fixed rules. However, if we move on to probability, there the words are a little bit different. For example, if I say to my friends, let's drive to Alicante. It shouldn't, or it oughtn't to, take us too long to drive in this new Ferrari of mine.
We can dream.
We can dream. So I'm talking about probability. I mean, I don't know. There may be traffic. There may be a problem. But probably, it shouldn't, or it oughtn't to, take us too long to drive to Alicante from Valencia in this Ferrari. That's probability. However, I cannot use must. Aha. Or the negative, mustn't. I can't, because in this case, it would not be the same if I said it mustn't take us too long. It would be a different medium.
It would be prohibition.
Well, it would be something that we just couldn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you can use should and ought to express probability. I think probably it shouldn't, that's the negative of should, or it oughtn't to, the negative of ought to, take us too long to drive in this fast Ferrari to Alicante.
No debería.
Yeah. But if you use must, it's more than probability, it's deduction. In other words, it's 100% probable. In other words, it's certainty. If I say to you, for example, what day is it? I'm not sure. Oh, it must be Sunday. The streets are quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It must be Sunday. I'm sure of it. I'm 100% sure. Yeah. Not it should be Sunday. Not it ought to be Sunday. It must be Sunday. It's a deduction, which is, if you like, 100% probability. So should and ought to suggest probability, which is less than 100%, whereas must, in the same kind of function, is 100% probability, which is actually deduction or certainty. Certainty is third tetha.
So I could say, I'm really hungry, it must be lunchtime.
Yes, you're certain of it. There's no doubt, it's 100% probable. So they're not interchangeable in that respect. It isn't the case that must is stronger. It's actually slightly different meaning. Mm-hmm. When you talk about probability, should, ought to, or deduction, which is 100% probability, which is certainty. By the way, listeners, you may have been surprised at the pronunciation of oughtn't to. Yes, it does sound funny, but that's what it is.
Oughtn't to.
I would say, Craig, it's not that common in modern day spoken English.
I can't remember the last time I said ought yep. to and oughtn't to. I just say should and shouldn't.
Well, I occasionally use ought to. For no particular reason,
mm-hmm.
but oughtn't to, the negative,
no.
Very rarely.
Maybe because it's not easy to say, oughtn't to.
Yeah. If you're wondering about the spelling, it's, as you would expect, OUGHTN'T, and it's pronounced oughtn't, followed by to, oughtn't to. But it's uncommon. Shouldn't, it's more common.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I wanted to talk about is orders or instructions. For polite orders or instructions, polite, educado, de buenos modales, we use should, or negative shouldn't, of course. For example, students should answer all parts of this exam. It might say at the front of a first certificate exam paper. I'll repeat that. It might be written, students should answer all parts of this exam. That's an instruction. It's not advice. It's an instruction. They're saying, do it. Answer all parts of the exam. But to be polite and to be formal, we use should. Students should answer all parts of the exam. Craig, would you consider using ought to for that?
No, I think I would probably use should. And I'm thinking now that I've seen a few times on the internet where you have to complete a form with your name, your address, your email address, you should use capital letters is quite common. I've seen that on a few web pages. You should use capital letters, mayúsculas, when you complete the form.
Right. And as you said, you wouldn't use ought to. This is one case where should and ought to are not interchangeable. You don't use ought to for polite orders or instructions. You do not, only should, not ought to.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you did. Maybe you hadn't thought about it, but I'm sure you knew it. However, you can use must for orders, but in this case, they're stronger orders. Students must answer all parts of the exam could also be written at the front of the first certificate, but it would be stronger and more direct. It wouldn't be incorrect, but it would be more likely to write should just because it's more polite and more formal. But must is certainly correct. When I speak to my students in class, I remind them, you must answer all parts of the first certificate exam because that's me speaking to my students and I want to make it very clear and I'm being informal. However, when they see the actual written first certificate paper, what will be written is students should. But that should is an instruction. It's not advice.
I think I've seen you must write in pen, for example.
Possibly. Maybe to make it clearer that that's a very, very important.
Yeah.
To stress the strength of it?
You must use pencil because the computers check the results with... they identify the pencil, but they don't identify pen.
So maybe they make differences then between the strength of the instructions to show which ones are the most important.
Because must is stronger.
Okay. Craig, do you think you ought to visit Disneyland before you're 60 to see Mickey Mouse?
I think I must. I feel this incredible internal burning desire to visit Disneyland before I retire.
When do you think you should go? What time of year?
As soon as possible. Which time of year?
When should you go?
In Florida, isn't it? So probably in the winter.
You could go to Euro Disney in Paris.
Yes, I could do. But it's not the same, is it? It's like drinking beer with no alcohol.
So you feel you really must go to Florida, to the original Disneyland?
Absolutely. I've got to see Mickey in person.
In person, you do. Craig, I guess we must move on to the next section.
We should. So, vocabulary in the home. I think last episode or the one before we spoke about the salon. Do you remember the living room or lounge? This episode, I thought we could speak about words connected to the kitchen because I know you like to cook. Frigorifico or nevera. I never understood why there are two words in Spanish for the same thing, but we'd say fridge or refrigerator. Is that why?
I would never say refrigerator, and I don't think you would either.
No, I wouldn't. It's the long form.
But who would say it?
Is there a difference between frigorifico and nevera?
Not that I know of. Who would say refrigerator?
Nobody I know. You'd probably see it maybe in written English, in instructions, but not in spoken English.
Don't you know any Americans?
Would they say refrigerator?
Always.
Really?
Americans don't say fridge.
I didn't know that, as far as I know.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Hey, honey, you got any cheese in the refrigerator?
So they wouldn't say fridge?
Not that I know of. It's very uncommon in American English, as far as I know.
Okay. Congelador, that's easy.
Freezer.
It's in the freezer. Yep.
And if something's in the freezer, how would you describe its condition, its state?
It's frozen.
And if I don't want it to be frozen, if I want to bring it back to its normal state, what do I have to do?
You have to defrost the food.
Not unfreeze.
No, defrost.
But the word unfreeze exists, right?
Unfreeze.
It does exist.
If a video freezes.
Yes. That's unfreeze, but defrost food.
Sometimes confusing for Spanish speakers is the difference between oven and or horno. and the grill on top, or the hob, what we would say the hob, H-O-B. So the oven is where you put the cake.
Yeah, and it has a door that closes.
Exactly. And the gas or electric hob on the top of the oven, or sometimes next to it, is what would the Spanish for that be?
You mean los fuegos?
Fuegos, se dice?
Yeah, okay. There's probably another word as well, but I know them as los fuegos. There might be two or three or four, you say, rings on the hob.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Rings on the hob.
Yeah, all of them together are the hob, but you can talk about the individual rings.
That's right.
As far as I know in Spanish, it's los fuegos.
And if you take the hob and the oven together, it's the cooker. Which is confusing because some people use cooker for the person who cooks. But, of course, the person who cooks is a cook. Or if they work in an expensive restaurant or nice hotel, they would probably be called a chef.
And what's a grill?
A grill is when the flames or the heat come from above.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Or below.
Or below.
On a barbecue, for example, flame-grilled.
Parrilla in Spanish?
Could be, yeah. When it's not an oven and you don't need to close the door, you can have air circulating and you've heat on one side only.
Ah.
One side only. Can be above or it can be below. For example, one way of making toast, if you don't have a toaster, put the bread under the grill. Now, you don't want to put them in the oven. You just want to do one side of the bread, then turn it over and do the other side because you've got heat on only one side. That's the grill. Of course, in Spain, people don't use the grill that much, do they, at home?
No.
They use grills in restaurants, but they use the type of traditional grill, which will be like a real flame, and then they put the grill over the top of it, so the heat is coming from below. That's also a grill.
Mm-hmm.
But at home in your kitchen, it's probably going to be heat from above, and you will have like a little shelf where you put the food underneath. Keep the door open and cook the food, and that's grill.
You know what I fancy now, Reza? A grilled cheese sandwich. I've got a craving for a grilled cheese sandwich. You're speaking about that.
Me too.
More appliances for the kitchen. Washing machine. Lavadora. Washing machine. And a very similar one, but not for washing your clothes, for washing your plates and your cutlery. Dishwasher.
Do you have a dishwasher, Craig?
We do, but it's very, very small. It's a very small dishwasher.
I don't have one. Do you think I should get one when I get my kitchen done up?
I think you should. Yeah, done up. That's interesting. The phrasal verb to do up, to reformar, decorate.
Reformar, yep.
Yep, to decorate your, to do up your kitchen. I think you should because they are very, very useful and save a lot of time.
I'd be interested to know from our listeners, if you could be bothered, I know it's a silly thing to ask, but let me know, do you have a dishwasher or do you wash the dishes by hand? I'd like to know.
And some people, I used to enjoy washing dishes by hand because it's one of those activities that you can do and think about something else. It's kind of like meditation. So it's very mechanical. You wash the dishes, your mind wanders and you think of other things. And it's kind of therapeutic. It's I used to enjoy it. Now you just throw the plates in the dishwasher and press a button. Yeah.
Also, Craig, we were talking earlier about should we recycle, etc. I said I think we must. You said I think we should in Valencia because you're not sure about the facilities.
I'm very cynical.
Yeah. Well, also for environmental reasons, perhaps we should wash by hand for environmental reasons. It uses up a lot of electricity to use a dishwasher. There's that to consider.
There is, but I think first of all, if that's going to be policy, I think the governments should force the big industrial companies to take the lead on that. I don't think it's fair that they should oblige and force the people in the country in their homes, in their private homes, to set the example. The companies should be doing that first, and I'm not sure they are. So I think the governments have to be stricter on the companies, and then we would follow. But that's my personal opinion.
You know, Craig, earlier we're talking about...
Just for the record, I do, before we get emails, I do separate my rubbish. I do separate my plastic rubbish from my food, from my glass and paper.
You know, Craig, you were talking earlier about all the different parts of the cooker. What would you put on the rings on the hob?
A frying pan, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Sartén, a frying pan, or maybe a saucepan.
How would you say saucepan in Spanish? I would say maybe una olla.
Una olla, yeah. Una olla. Yeah. And I said that in the dishwasher we'd put plates, dishes, cups, and I also said the word cutlery, which in my dictionary says cubiertos or cubetería.
Yep.
So cutlery would be what?
Knives, forks, spoons.
Absolutely. Dessert spoons, teaspoons, tablespoons, all kind of spoons and knives and forks.
What about soup spoons, Craig?
And soup spoons, absolutely.
Now here's a bit of trivial nonsense for everybody. Tonterías triviales. As far as I know, it's only really the British and Irish who use soup spoons. Possibly Americans, I'm not sure. But in Europe, to my knowledge, there's no such thing as a soup spoon.
You don't think the Scottish or the Welsh would either?
British and Irish.
Oh, British. And Irish. Sorry.
British and Irish. I'm fairly sure in Spain there's no such thing as the difference between a dessert spoon and a soup spoon. As far as I know, it's the same thing.
A soup spoon's a bit more rounded than
it's,
a dessert
it's round.
Spoon. It's round.
A proper soup spoon
That's
is completely
right.
round, whereas a dessert spoon is oval.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen any or many soup spoons in Spain in my life.
Reza, have you got a food mixer?
I don't, actually.
Food mixer, batidora. Food mixers are also very, very, very useful, especially if you make cakes.
Oh, I do. I've just remembered, yeah, but I hardly ever use it.
Mm-hmm.
What's essential, Craig, for preparing ingredients when you want to chop them up, chop them into pieces?
Well, you need a good selection of knives. And remember, listeners, that knife with an F is the singular, K-N-I-F-E. So the K is silent, knife. But the plural has a V, knives. And then you get vibration in your throat, in your garganta. So it's knife and knives.
And where are you going to place these ingredients to chop them with the knives?
You would put them on a board.
A chopping board.
And then you chop them. So the name of the board is a chopping board.
And where are you going to put the chopping board? Not in midair.
No, you'd put the chopping board on the
work surface?
I was going to say counter.
Counter, in American English, yeah.
Would be more in a shop, perhaps.
Yeah, or in American English, I think they say counter, don't
yeah.
they?
I used to know the Spanish word for counter, but I've forgotten it. Another interesting word which I checked this morning, rubbish bin in the UK. British English, you'd say rubbish bin. Would you say rubbish bin in Ireland?
Yep.
What would they say in America? Any idea? In North America?
For domestic use, I reckon they would say garbage bin or trash can. Do they also say as well?
Trash can is the word I have. Mm-hmm. Trash can or perhaps garbage can. But interestingly, in Spanish, in mainland Spain, you would call it a cubo de basura. But it's different in Mexico. It's bote de basura.
Huh?
And in Peru, Argentina and Bolivia, tacho.
Oh.
Tacho de basura. And in Venezuela, pipote.
Wow.
Pipote de basura. Interesting, huh?
Craig, you know what? We've talked about many things which most of our listeners are familiar with. However, there's one object we haven't mentioned yet, which is absolutely essential in a British and Irish kitchen, and I should imagine most American and Australian and Canadian kitchens as well.
I know what you're thinking.
What is it?
Teapot?
Actually, no, but yeah, you're quite right. But before the teapot, what do you need?
A kettle.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. But the teapot probably as well. So teapot, tetera, but the kettle, el hervidor de agua, eléctrico.
Although in some dictionaries, a kettle would also be tetera, which is confusing because you boil the water in the kettle and then you pour the water into a teapot.
I think a better way of describing it is hervidor de agua.
Okay.
And I know many Spanish people who do not own a kettle, nor do they desire to have one.
I'll tell you something, an interesting story. When I first moved to Valencia, and I did live with a couple of with ladies, a couple of Spanish ladies, and they didn't have kettles. They boiled water. If I wanted tea, they boiled water in a saucepan right. on the hob, on the gas or on the electric. They didn't have a kettle.
There are still plenty of people
and they
doing
boiled
that.
Water, boiled water in a saucepan.
It's still common.
It was a culture shock.
Mm-hmm. Why do we need our kettle? As Craig said, for the tea, above exactly. all, which you then put in the teapot.
And then you put it in a tea cup. So the difference between cup and glass. Cup is tather and glass is vessel.
Craig, where do you get the water in your kitchen from?
From the sink.
Mm-hmm. Where does it come out of?
The tap.
Or faucet?
Or faucet in America. Yeah. The tap in the kitchen or the tap in British English and faucet in American English.
Can I mention an important cultural point which I hear 3 or 4 times a year?
Yes,
from Spanish students.
Go ahead.
It seems that the British and Irish are about the only country left in the civilized world where many sinks do not have mixer taps.
That's right, because the hot and the cold water come out of separate taps or faucets.
This, in modern-day Spain, is unheard of.
Right.
Unheard of. You will not find, probably in existence these days in Spain, in shops, separate hot and cold taps. They find it incredibly antiquated.
And the Americans do too when they go to the UK and they stay in hotels or houses where they either burn their hands really badly because the water's too hot, or they freeze their hands because the water's too cold, and you can't mix it together.
They have a good point. Why on earth do we keep on doing it in Britain?
No idea. Ireland? I don't know. It's a strange quirk or custom of the UK. Shall we move on to pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay, moving on to pronunciation, and I thought we could look, Reza, at some words which may be difficult for Spanish speakers to pronounce. We had knife before, and knives, which has a silent K that you do not pronounce, so knife and knives. And I have a couple more words with silent letters. There is, of course, the verb to know, which is spelled K-N-O-W and pronounced no, N-O. I know, I knew in the past. And another word which I hear mistakes very often is with the word island, isla, because island has an S, mm-hmm. I-S-L-A-N-D. Can you think of any more words with silent letters?
Psychologist.
Ooh, that's a 5-point word, that one, psychologist, yeah.
Silent P at the beginning.
Silent P at the beginning. What about the one of the tourist attractions in Edinburgh?
Well, let's see. In Edinburgh, you've got the castle. Ah. Castle.
Castle, yeah. That's castle. It. Castle. Castle's got the silent T.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Listen, silent T.
Listen has a silent T. And what do you walk, if you get married or if you go to the cinema or in a church, you have the space between the rows of seats or in the supermarket?
You walk down the aisle.
Mm-hmm. Silent S. A-I-S-L-E. And the pronunciation is like the contraction of I will, which would be aisle. It's exactly the same. Aisle and aisle. Another difficult word to pronounce, the singers in a church.
Aha. Choir.
Choir, which is spelled C-H-O-I-R. So many Spanish people read it because in Spain you just read the letters and pretty much pronounce what you read, which looks like choir.
Yeah.
Pronunciation in English is choir. Choir.
My favorite one of all, you know how if a word ends I-T-E, it's nearly always pronounced at the end ite, for example, sight, S-I-T-E.
Yeah. Right, absolutely.
Kite, yeah. Cometa, K-I-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hypocrite. I love that word because it ends I-T-E.
So you do not see that. Hypocrite. You don't say hypocrite, you say hypocrite.
Yeah. And so many native speakers get that word wrong.
Yeah.
I-T-E, but it's hypocrite. That's a really weird one. Yeah. With a silent E at the end. And the I is pronounced I, not I. And it's really funny because the word is so hypocritical. Because there's the rule, I-T-E, it, but not hypocrite. Oh, no.
But that's a good way to remember it. If you remember that the word itself is hypocritical because it makes you think it's one thing, but it's not, it's another, then you remember perhaps to pronounce it correctly. One or two more. A big problem with Spanish speakers is when you have two vowels together. But it's actually one vowel sound in English. One common example is friend, which is F-R-I-E-N-D, which many Spanish people pronounce friend.
Yes.
My friend is coming out tonight. I'm going to meet my friend. But there's only one vowel sound in there, and it's e, friend.
Another one?
Meat.
M-E-A-T, meat.
Meat.
Not meat. I like to eat the meat. No, I like to eat meat.
Yeah, one vowel sound, meat. And another E-A word, colleague. Colleague. And also the problem of the G-U-E at the end. The word is spelled C-O-L-L-E-A-G-U-E, the pronunciation colleague.
Uh-huh. Of course, so many words have a silent E at the end.
That's right.
Colleague. Language,
mm-hmm.
Baggage. Mm-hmm.
And finally, just one more small point with words that begin with S. It's quite a common Spanish error to put an E before the S. So instead of saying Spain, you could say Espain, which is not correct. And not Espanish, but Spanish.
And the classic Estop.
Stop. Yeah, should be just stop. like a think of a snake that moves in stop. Or I'm Spanish. I come from Spain. Okay, that's all I have, Reza. I think we should leave it there and stop. What do you think?
If we must.
We should. If you need help with a question about grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation, or anything related to English, send us an email to craig@inglespodcast.com. That's C-R-A-I-G, Craig. Or belfastreza@gmail.com. And remember, you can also leave us a voice message on the website at inglespodcast.com. And don't miss a podcast episode. Suscribirse to our email newsletter at inglespodcast.com. We'll send you a monthly email of all our podcasts. And remember, you can also learn English free at mansioningles.com. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. So, we'll see you later. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.